This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah.com. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Stuck in traffic.
So the cost of commuting is about to go up, and it's costing us more than I think a lot of people anticipated. It's going to impact Seattle the hardest. Seattle, if you live here. Seattle, if you commute here. Now, first, if you take the ferry, you're going to be seeing a 5% increased rate fee. It's going to be used to maintain the current fleet of ferries. They're going to buy a new one. That's going to happen in May of next year. So you have some time to plan for that. But on top of that, right as the summer comes to an end, drivers who, again, are going through downtown Seattle, they're going to have to pay. We talked about this last week. If you ride that tunnel, it's going to be tolled. Right now, they've decided to extend the time that you don't get tolled. But the second that it does get tolled, there's going to be some changing in habits. Now, the toll is going to be $2.25 each way during the commuting hours. And that means you're either going to pay that and be down $2.25 each way, or you're going to suffer through the horrific traffic on I-5 or the even more horrific traffic on surface streets through downtown Seattle. So you're kind of screwed. But Mark Hallenbeck, who's the director at the Washington Transportation Center at the UW, he told Como TV exactly how all of this is supposed to work.
As the metro area grows, you need an increase in services. The problem is increases in services require space, and we don't have any space. Oh. So therefore, those increases are more expensive. So the great thing about user fees, I use this, I pay for it, is the people who pay for it are the ones who are using it.
Except that impacts businesses when people don't want to pay for it. And of course, it makes it more expensive for employees who need to pay for it in order to get to work. And of course, on top of that, this whole idea that we don't have the space, you literally built a tunnel. You absolutely have the space. In fact, not only did you build that tunnel and then charge us for it, you're now charging other people via the toll system to pay for it, while then expanding the property where the viaduct used to exist, which you're paying for with additional taxes specifically in that area, the local, the LID taxes. So the people who actually live in that area are going to have to pay for taxes on things that they're not going to even get to enjoy exclusively. So this is, of course, a giant scam. And of course, people who actually own businesses or operate businesses in the region, they are showing some concern. Todd Beazold is the chief financial officer at Merlino Foods, and he told Como that commuting costs are absolutely hurting them.
Well, it just adds up and keeps piling on to the extra costs. I have all these costs that are going in. I can't eat them all. I pass them to a restaurant customer. They're already squeezed.
Yeah, they're absolutely squeezed, especially if you now are existing in either SoTo, downtown Seattle, or Pioneer Square, because not only are you paying more as drivers, if you own a business, if you run a business in Seattle, you're also getting hit. Businesses around the tunnel generally fear that their businesses is going to hurt because you're unlikely to drive through a ton of traffic or a toll tunnel for some kind of one-off shopping experience in SoTo, if, of course, you can go somewhere else. So if I'm living in South Lake Union and I don't want to drive into the tunnel to get to a spot that I like to grab coffee in Pioneer Square because I don't want to get hit with a $2.25 fee. That's absolutely ridiculous. And I don't want to have to deal with the traffic. Well, I'm not going to go there anymore. Now, if we didn't have the horrible traffic that, again, is being created by this tunnel, that will be created by this tunnel, if we didn't have the $2.25 fee, maybe I would still go there. But instead, I'm going somewhere else. I'm going a little bit closer to home, or I'm not going to go through a space that I'm going to have to pay for. So this is a problem, and that means, in theory, that the businesses down there will have to compete for fewer customers who live nearby, who can walk, who can bike, who can take the bus. Now, if you're a business that can handle a smaller pot of clients, customers to choose from, okay, you're fine. And I suppose if you're truly unique, if the only place I can get this one item I need is in SoTo, of course I'm going to pay the extra dollars to get there. But if you're not that unique, if you're not a business like most restaurants that have the ability to do really, really well from a smaller pot of customers to pick from, this could absolutely hurt not just your own bottom line, but also the employees who now have to get to your area who are going to end up paying $2.25 each way just to get to a shift. Now, all of these are incredibly important issues to talk about when discussing these types of schemes to get you to pay more money for items, but we don't ever seem to consider them, certainly not publicly. I'm assuming that in some place, in some agency, in some conference room around the table, they're having these conversations, but you're not part of those conversations in any meaningful way. We end up making it simply more expensive to live in, to operate in, and then weirdly, directly after that, we complain about how expensive it is. We say, oh man, it's so expensive to live in Seattle. You're the ones making it expensive. The people who are complaining about how expensive it is to live in Seattle, the council members, the mayor's office saying we got to do something, we got a housing affordability crisis on our hands, too expensive to live here. You're the ones responsible for this. We're not. I'm not doing anything. I'm trying to make it cheaper to live here. You're making it more expensive, and then you ask for more leeway in fighting to make it less expensive via property taxes, which then, of course, makes it more expensive. It makes no sense. And I think they know that, which is why they never get involved in these conversations in any sort of meaningful way publicly, because they know they can't win them. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
So Beto O'Rourke is trying to use the shootings in El Paso and Dayton to basically boost what everyone knows is a failing campaign. We played for you the audio from Stephanie Ruhle the other day of MSNBC talking about, it's weird to talk about this, but I wonder if he's able to turn these shootings into some sort of a life for his campaign. Well, that's exactly what he's doing. But in doing that, not only is he, I think, unfairly going after the president, he's unfairly going after tens of millions of people in this country, because he told MSNBC, oh, the United States, totally, Donald Trump didn't create the racism. We've always been the most horrifically racist country in the history of the world.
He's not the source of racism in this country. This country's been racist as long as it's been a country,
but okay.
He is certainly fanning the flames. He is certainly making violence like this more possible and more real until we change course.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there, right? I mean, and by the way, what I love about this clip, because he's trying to present himself as this moral authority, when the moral authority is a dude who got into an accident after a DUI, then fled, like a DUI fleer, you don't want that person to be the moral authority. If we're in that position, God, are we in trouble. We are in so much trouble. We're in so much trouble when a guy who's talking about how racist we all are, how this is a racist country, is a white dude who goes by the name Beto because he thinks it gives him an advantage in Texas where there's a large Latino population. Now, he basically called all of you guys racist. Because when you call tens of millions of people racist, which is exactly what he's doing when he's saying this country is racist, because otherwise, I mean, really what he's talking about are different laws that are put on the books that he believes is racist, they like to talk about institutional racism. Well, who's putting in those institutions? It's the American people. So he's calling tens and tens and tens of millions of people, hundreds of millions of people, racist. What he's doing here is actually fanning the flames. He wants to pretend that the rhetoric coming from President Trump specifically is making it more possible for these shootings. He says that about El Paso, and he completely ignores what's going on in Dayton, Ohio. No conversation in any meaningful way about the leftist views of the Dayton, Ohio shooter. Why is that? Why are we not talking about the fact that he was a sympathizer, a supporter of Antifa, a violent political group? Why do we not have that conversation? He does not care about rhetoric. I have said it on the show many, many times. We should have a conversation about rhetoric and what that actually means. In fact, next hour, we're going to be talking with Mark Lauder from the Trump campaign specifically about the role that rhetoric is playing, the nasty kind of rhetoric is playing in these increased instances of violence. But let's be clear. The left, as much as they want to call out all of the vitriol, they're equally guilty. They're absolutely equally guilty. We have Nicole Wallace on MSNBC saying that Donald Trump wants to exterminate Latinos.
Certainly the last Republican president fought for, sought, and it's not ideal, but had 44% of
right.
Latino vote. It was so politically powerful inside the last Republican administration. President Obama used the power of the presidency mm-hmm. to try to pass comprehensive immigration reform with the Latino community, Latino leaders at the table. You now have a president, as you said, talking about exterminating
right.
Latinos.
He's not talking about exterminating Latinos. She goes on to apologize on Twitter in a way that meant she wasn't really sorry, because she ends up using it as an opportunity to go after Trump. You have people who are on MSNBC and CNN on a regular basis calling Republicans Nazis. simply because they have different perspectives than you. You're calling people out as fascists. You are creating an environment in which we are going to go to war against one another. We're going to fight each other. And then in the same breath as you call everybody fascist Nazis, white nationalists, racists, evil bigots, you're saying we got to tone down the rhetoric because look what's going on from Trump. You have to lead by example. And when you start leading by example, maybe we can have an honest conversation about it. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Don't forget, you can follow me on Instagram. Just fire up that app. Search for the screen name Jason Rantz on Instagram. Instagram, my name, J-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z, and you can go behind the scenes of the show. In fact, later today, I will be at the Seahawks game. I'll be on the field for some cool stuff. If you want to go behind the scenes and see what it's like to be actually on the field at CenturyLink, add me on Instagram under Jason Rantz. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? In Everett.
So let's go to Everett, where a billboard went up calling the city of Everett out for focusing a little bit too much of their attention on bikini baristas. And I can't help but kind of agree. I don't totally agree. It's a board that's outside of Showcase Coffee, which I guess is a bikini barista shop. They say Everett is more worried about bikinis than drugs and our homeless crisis. Now, I don't necessarily think that they care more about bikini baristas than homelessness, right? They clearly care about homelessness. You've got a really good Snohomish County-led program that we've been talking about on the show for months now, where officers are being given the power to actually go after people who are breaking the law, who are living out on the streets by offering them services or offering them jail. So I don't believe that the city of Everett doesn't care about homelessness and are spending more time on bikini baristas than that. I do think they care more about bikini baristas as they should. I think there's no doubt about that. We should not be having so many conversations and having so many news stories about something as silly as a bikini barista stand. Alicia is a bikini barista. She works actually at XO Espresso. And she told King 5 that Everett, God, spend some time on other things.
I get it. I get what they're saying. They're trying to make a broad point out of it because there's a lot more going on in the city of Everett. We are fighting for our bikini rights.
They are, because the city's been trying to impose a dress code on them, take away the bikinis, put them in tank tops and shorts instead. And obviously that kind of hits at one of the key selling points of going to one of these places. I have no idea how good the coffee is, which is what I generally look for when I'm going to a coffee shop. But they're clearly trying to use the sexiness of the barista to get customers in. Here's what Alicia thinks about, or here's what Alicia says she currently wears and what she might have to change to if this lawsuit isn't successful, the challenge to the dress code.
As of right now, we kind of wear like a bikini. It might be like a smaller bikini, but it still covers, you know, the full-on areola or nipple. Dress code would be about finger length down to your legs, and tank tops would be down to your midriff.
Boo! I really don't care. Last month, the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals overturned the lower court judge's decision to block the city of Everett from imposing the dress code, according to King 5. This is going to be appealed. So, you know, when you look at a story like this, and we're talking about it because some folks in the community are talking about it, I'm obviously not interested in going to a bikini barista stand. But the concern here screams of moral outrage. That's what I've always thought about this. And I'm not saying that as someone who thinks this is okay. I'm not endorsing any more that I'm condemning. I just don't care. I think you clearly have the right and should have the right to wear a bikini for a business in which your whole appeal is being an attractive woman who is selling coffee to lonely dudes or dudes who just like to look you over. Like, I don't find that appealing. I wouldn't go to a coffee shop like this unless the coffee was amazing. And if it did, I would be going only for the coffee. But the people who are concerned about this, you're just mad that they're in bikinis. You're mad at the sexualization. I mean, I get it if you're mad, but we should not be governing by moral outrage. Now, some folks in Everett in the city will say, look, we've seen a lot of kinds of sexual degenerates who have been flashing and getting flashed, and it gets into that realm of sort of illegal behavior. I've certainly heard some of those allegations. Okay, fine. Then you should go after those businesses that are breaking the law. Simply putting on a bikini and selling coffee should not be deemed breaking the law. Your moral outrage aside, if there's something specifically going on at any of these bikini shops, get the cops involved, let them go after them and close them down. Now, if that's what this was about, going after that kind of element, the criminal element that's allegedly involved in some cases in some businesses, then that's what they would do. But they're going one step forward. Wearing a bikini as a barista does not make you inherently more likely to commit a crime that has to alert everybody in the community, right? That's just a basic fact. People who are wearing bikinis, it doesn't mean, oh, I'm wearing a bikini, I guess I'm going to go break the law. That doesn't actually happen. So this is a ridiculous position for the city of Everett to take. No, I don't think they're spending more time on this than they are on homelessness, but they're spending way too much time on something solely because they get upset or uncomfortable that a woman is serving coffee with a bikini. And for those of you who don't like this kind of business, here's something really simple. Do not go. Don't go. Oh, but my husband might. Okay, well, that's on your husband. Oh, but my wife will. I think your husband might be okay with. No, I'm kidding. You don't want your family members, your spouse, your kids to go to these coffee shops, then don't let them go to those coffee shops. It's really that simple. But I'd love to hear from you. Send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
This story is almost too good to be true. And I fear it's more about publicity and someone with a big ego wanting to get back into the news. But oh my gosh, I pray that this actually happens. Michael Avenatti is apparently still mulling a run for the presidency. This time, of course, he's mulling this run post allegations that he's been extorting money or been trying to extort money from both clients and future victims, I suppose. He was accused of extorting $20 million from Nike, and then a month later, he was actually indicted on 36 counts, including stealing money from clients and then lying to regulators about his actual income. He's denied wrongdoing in both cases. But he did an interview with CNBC about the race for the White House and the chances that the Democrats have right now in defeating Donald Trump. And he's probably looking at both the polls and the reality of the situation and thinking the same thing, frankly, that we are, which is there's no one right now that I can see easily beating Donald Trump. There's a lot of people who would easily lose to Donald Trump, key among them being the socialists, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, regardless of what any poll says. I think Joe Biden has an easier time than not, but I don't think it's going to be easy. Everybody else will lose very, very easily. And that concerns Michael Avenatti because, number one, he's a Democrat who doesn't want a Republican in office. And number two, he really, 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 really hates President Trump. And so he wants to do what he can to help defeat the president. Up until this point, he's just been sending some nasty tweets that get retweeted, I guess, but isn't really making news. So I guess he had to go one step further by saying, hey, maybe I am going to run. He did an interview with CNBC. And he said, I am increasingly concerned that the Democrats don't have the right fighter to go toe-to-toe with Trump. And the future of the Republic and our way of life is on the line. Oh, my God. Okay, yeah, sure. He is a brawler, speaking of Trump, who has no bounds. The Dems need a guy who can match him punch for punch. I may be that guy. I know for a fact he's not that guy. I think all of us know he's never, ever, ever going to hold any political office, let alone the office of the presidency. With that said, oh my God, I want him to run so badly. I don't think I have ever wanted someone to run so badly for a position than I do Michael Avenatti. Because number one, it would be the easiest winner for a Republican ever. Number two, I can't wait to use Michael Avenatti as the poster child for the Democratic Party and say, this is your leader, really? This is the guy who you're a fan of? This scummy lawyer who is alleged to have extorted money from vulnerable clients? Okay, cool. But number three, most importantly for me, this would be the best TV and radio ever. Can you imagine Michael Avenatti and President Trump slugging it out as on the debate stage? Oh my God. In fact, I have to, pardon me for a moment. I want to turn to prayer. Dear God, Jason Rantz here. Hi. I know you know that, but I need to do that for the sake of this radio show so people remember who they're actually listening to. Dear God, I want so badly for Michael Avenatti to run for president. I don't ask you for much. And if I'm being honest with you, the things I have asked you for, you have not delivered. I'm still not a multimillionaire. I'm still alone, crying myself to sleep every single night because no one loves me. But if you were to grant me just one wish only, I wish to you that you deliver the strength to Michael Avenatti to actually run for the office of the presidency. The amount of entertainment you would give me, the amount of content you would give me would be immeasurable. You know I don't ask for much. But on this one, please, dear God, please, please give me this. And then give me the strength to pull out as much humor as humanly possible from the Avenatti campaign taking on Donald Trump. Please, 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 God, please, dear God, thank you. If you want to join me in that prayer, please do so when you can privately do that. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text. On the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Welcome back to the Jason Ranch Show. Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller, Smiles by Design. The concept of the Big Local, very simple to understand. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle, and they end up ignoring where it is you live, the communities you care about most. And so we do the opposite. We ignore Seattle, and we spend all of our time focused on you. It is the Big Local, and we start with an interesting and somewhat confusing story out of Wapato. Their police chief, Dominic Rizzi, was just fired. And he was fired just a few months after he was hired, after he was dismissed from the same job in Yakima. So on the surface, I can say I'm not shocked. If the guy was fired from his last job, it makes sense, I suppose. I certainly believe that there might have been a reason for him to be fired from this one. But the way the mayor is talking about it, Dora Alvarez Roa, it makes no sense to me. It really doesn't make any sense. According to Como, the mayor is quoted as saying, Chief Rizzi did an awesome job while he was there, and we're going in a different direction. Okay, so he's doing an awesome job, but you're going in a different direction. Does that mean you're going in the direction of not wanting an awesome job? You want a horrible job done? Yeah, we've really liked the work that he's been doing, but we've been looking for bad work from our police chief. We've been looking for someone who makes it easier for people to get mugged on the street or beat up on the street or severely injured. We were looking for not an awesome job. So we decided to go another direction. That makes no sense to me. What other direction can they go if you're saying, I mean, I know some people don't want to get involved in the reasons why someone is being fired because of privacy rights and fear of a lawsuit. But don't just say he did an awesome job. You can simply have just said, Chief Rizzi and I believe that the direction that we need to go to requires a different leader. Okay, then we can kind of read into that you not being happy with Chief Rizzi. But when you literally say he did an awesome job, but we're getting rid of him anyway, that's bringing a lot of questions up. And it's not just me. Here's a local talking with Como TV. It was like, I don't understand this either.
We hired a police chief to take over and get the department back on track. And you know, for him to be dismissed like that is ridiculous.
I totally agree. Again, I'm assuming they have a reason to fire this guy, but be a little bit more forthcoming. Now, the dude who's going to be in charge in the interim is Michael Campos. He's a sergeant there. He said he was actually blindsided by this, but he tells Kimi TV that he wants to change a few things going forward.
I consider myself as just picking up the ball where I left at from when I started as the chief of police back in 2018. We haven't had a police department meeting for approximately going a year and some months now. Last meeting we had was in August of 2018, was when I was the chief of police. My first and foremost will be to have a police department meeting.
Okay, I mean, you can have a meeting. It seems shocking to me that you haven't had a meeting in a year and a half, but have things been so bad that it required a meeting? This is just it's a confusing story. And I think it's been made more confusing specifically by the mayor here. They owe it to the people to explain why they're going through another police chief. Explain what happened. Taxpayers in Wapato, they have the right to know exactly what's going on. I think every day that goes by that you don't offer an explanation, including not really even knowing what the timeline's going to be to get a new chief, you're just leading to more and more confusion, and taxpayers have the right to know. Speaking of the right to know, some of you have been wondering whether or not there's a new choke point in Edmonds, and the answer is yes. There is more traffic, specifically traffic congestion on the I-5 on-ramp from Highway 104. And the reason is they've decided to add meters to the HOV bypass lane to northbound I-5. So if you're wondering why there's so much more traffic there, that's the reason. Here's the State Department of Transportation's Bart Treese.
This is a more efficient way of metering vehicles onto the freeway. So instead of a big platoon of vehicles that try to merge into a busy, backed up, slow-moving traffic, now it's, you've got an even pace of those vehicles heading on I-5.
And he says they're hoping the meters are going to ease specifically the congestion that kind of happens during the midday and will pop up from time to time.
It'll create a steadier flow of traffic on the freeway and also help those travel times at the peak and at the edge of the peak for the freeway to recover once you've got that peak period that dies down.
I mean, maybe. I think situations like this would be better served if instead of doing the metered on-ramps, we taught people how to merge. We taught people how to do the zipper merge, because right now we're not teaching that in any meaningful way. And I know that because anytime I'm in a car that gets onto a freeway, no one knows how to do the zipper merge. And the people who do know how to do the zipper merge, like myself, we feel bad about doing it because we know that other people think we're trying to cheat the line. Now, the whole idea of a zipper merge, for those of you who are not aware, which again, I'm willing to guess is a large portion of you, you've got all of this space on an on-ramp to a freeway. Now, people who drive on needlessly decide not to use up all of the space in front of them and go all the way to the front until you can no longer go in that own on-ramp lane. It merges into a normal lane. You cut over quickly, and you cut over as soon as you can. And sometimes you're hitting the brake and you're slowed down. Sometimes you're even stopped because you're trying to make way into the lane that you otherwise would be merging on automatically. And you do that because you don't want the person who's already stuck in traffic to think you're going up and taking all the space so that you can cheat them. You're not cheating them. They had the exact same opportunity to do that when they got on the on-ramp on the freeway that they entered. And anyone who thinks you're cheating the system, you're 100% wrong. That is why it's there. There's not supposed to be empty space when there's a whole bunch of traffic. If you've got empty space, you are contributing to the traffic. So stop giving me the look when I do that. Finally, for those of you who want to get out of your car, maybe you want to take light rail, but maybe you're living in Tacoma and you're like, well, obviously we can't do that, but good news is you're going to get the light rail at some point. Bad news is they're doing it really, really poorly with Sound Transit, because now we're hearing from yet another businessman who wants to lend his voice to the concerns that we've already been talking about from the business community there, that their light rail construction in Tacoma Stadium District is causing so many problems.
This is the fourth time they've dug up this same street, and they're coming back to do it again.
Four times already. Now they're doing it for a fifth time. That's Steven Salmoni. He's the owner of Salmoni's Pizza.
Have a look. There's no parking here on this side of the street.
There is no parking for his customers. And what happens if people can't park? Well, it means people won't show up to frequent the business, and it's costing him money. In fact, Cairo 7 TV spoke to a whole bunch of people who are complaining. Here are two of them.
We have multiple staff members that used to work here full-time, and now they're unable to work here full-time.
Hey, Franco, I went around the block twice to come in and get a suit or fix a suit for me, but there's no parking.
They can't find parking. So what exactly are these businesses supposed to do? Now, I know when you're busy constructing light rail, there's going to be some level of inconvenience. There's no doubt about that. And at some point, we all just have to accept that. But why are we tearing out streets five times? What's the purpose of that? And why are we spending that much money to dig and then cover, dig and then cover, dig and then cover, dig and then cover, and then dig and then cover? And by the way, is this the last time they're going to do that? Sound Transit appears so incompetent, and I'm assuming they have some explanation for this, but there's no way it's going to be a good one. Sorry. I just don't think they care about the communities that they impact and the businesses that they impact. And all you have to do is go to the city of Kent and see what Sound Transit tried to do to the Dick's Drive-In and the Starbucks and the Lowe's and an area in the city of Kent that was supposed to be of mixed use for the community, where people can live and walk and hang out. And instead, they were trying to put the warehouse there, a warehouse that makes no sense in that particular space. And instead of actually engaging in the community before putting it on a list of sites that they were thinking about, they just went ahead and put it on the list because they do not care who they inconvenience. They do not care who they hurt. They do not care about you, because they know there's nothing you can do to stop their projects ultimately. There's nothing you can do to stop giving your tax dollars to them. And they know that we have nowhere to go. No one to turn to to help in this situation because the board for Sound Transit is appointed by ideologues who hate cars, who also don't give a damn about you and your experience. It's not an elected position. They know that and they take advantage of it. It is wrong. What's happening here with these businesses, without any meaningful kind of help to these businesses, what do they expect is going to happen? People are going to hurt, and they're already, as you just heard there from one of the business owners, people are already starting to hurt. If they can't work the hours they're given, that means less money in their pockets. No compassion coming from Sound Transit. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-877. You can text me on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Is State Representative Drew Stokesbury, is he running for governor? Because that's the word. That's the rumor. Well, he's going to stop by in just a few moments to tell us of his decision. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. State Senator Phil Fortunato has announced he is running for governor. He is the highest profile candidate to declare so far. But rumor has it that State Representative Drew Stokesbury of Auburn is also considering, rather than speculate, however fun that actually is, I thought I'd ask him directly. Representative Stokesbury, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jason. It's a pleasure.
So are you running for governor?
You know, I hate to be that guy, but I'm still thinking about it. I'm talking it over with my family, with people in the community. You know, I've been approached by more people than I can count, you know, not just friends and neighbors and other elected officials, but teachers, Boeing workers, software engineers, you know, ordinary Washingtonians who just want a fresh perspective in state government. And I didn't run for the legislature to stroke my own ego or get recognition. I ran to serve my community, and if I run for governor, it'd be the same thing. It wouldn't be an ego trip. It'd be to serve the state. You know, we need a culture change in Olympia. We need somebody who understands how hard it is for working families to balance their budget, how expensive child care and college tuition is, how challenging it is to start a business in the state, and how harmful billions of dollars in new taxes the Democrats keep opposing can be to ordinary people. But we also need somebody who has the fresh ideas to solve today's complex problems, and we need somebody with the skills and temperament to pull all this off. And, you know, I'm considering running because I think I can offer these things. And, you know, as far as fresh ideas go, Y2K still feels kind of recent, but that was 20 years ago. And we can argue whether society's changes are good or bad, and I think they're a mix of both. But the fact is, today's problems are different, and they require forward-thinking solutions. I'd be if I did run and win, I'd be the youngest governor in the country by several years, but I view that as an advantage. I wouldn't be wasting time trying to apply 20th century solutions to 21st century problems.
Everything you just said sounds like you're running for governor. So what is that thing that's stopping you? What are you waiting to hear? Is this just whether your family wants to commit to, you know, life living with a guy who's running for governor or what?
You know, like I said, I think a lot comes down to more discussions with my family to make sure it's the right time. I've got two young sons, a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
My 5-year-old is going to start kindergarten next month. And as every parent knows or can remember, that's a huge milestone. And so I want to make sure it's right for my family, but I also want to make sure that I'm actually serving in the place where I can do the most good. I've talked to folks from out of state to get their perspective. You know, Maryland and Massachusetts are far more Democratic than Washington is, but they both have popular second-term Republican governors. I'm taking it seriously, but I want to make sure that if I get into it, I can win. I don't want it to all be for nothing.
Well, that would certainly be a problem from a Republican perspective as far as how few leaders we have representing King County in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, you know, that's true. And I kind of laughed because you mentioned that Phil announced for governor earlier this week, and he made a couple comments that kind of made me scratch my head. On the one hand, he said, when he was on your show, actually,
yep,
kind of said out of the blue that he got 2,500 to 3,000 more votes than me. I checked, and it was about 900, and that's partly because his race was ahead of mine on the ballot, so people kind of stopped voting halfway through. And also, my opponent spent four times as much money as his opponent. But I didn't know that that was really a competition. I thought we were kind of partners. We sent out joint mailers together. And he also apparently couldn't count up to three because he was telling Q13 that he was the last Republican elected official in King County, kind of neglecting me and my seatmate Morgan Irwin. So, you know, call me crazy, but hopefully your next governor can get some of those basic things right.
By the way, if you're just joining us, I'm talking with State Representative Drew Stokesbury, Republican of Auburn, as he is considering his run for governor. So, but that makes it sound like then if you were to run, this could get a little nasty, a little negative. Do you, in the back of your mind, wonder if, you know, there's this potential to have so much infighting that it ends up doing more harm than good?
You know, I don't think so. If I, you know, whether I run or whether I don't run, Republicans are going to face an uphill battle, and yep. we need to get behind the strongest candidate possible. Phil has pointed out that he needs to win 32% in Seattle, but, you know, he couldn't even get 32 people in Seattle to show up for his event yesterday. I counted 15 people there, and I know most of them. They're all great people. Phil's lucky to have their support. But our next governor needs to be able to inspire a lot more than 15 people. And we also need somebody who can win not just that 32% in Seattle, but we need to be able to win over those traditional Republican voters that have been a little bit disaffected by some of the stuff that is happening with the National Party and with the president. There's a lot of Romney Clinton voters out there, and regardless of whether they're going to vote for Donald Trump or whatever crazy leftists or Democrats nominate for president, we need a few of those people to come back and vote for the next Republican running for governor, just like they voted for Rod McKenna and Dino Rossi.
Last question for you. You know, I suppose if I were to pinpoint you, I would probably say that you're more of a moderate conservative than a hardcore conservative. That certainly plays very well in King County. And again, you're one of the very few Republicans elected in King County to the state legislature. But do you think that that kind of moderate conservative approach, assuming you agree with that label, do you think that works well on the east side of the state?
You know, we need somebody who can unite the entire party. We don't need a Donald Trump sycophant, because it's going to turn off all of these moderate Puget Sound voters who just want to make sure that they're not paying more in taxes than they need to, that their government is well run, and that their community is safe. But on the other hand, you know, you can't have somebody like we had run for the U.S. Senate 2 years ago who's not even a Republican anymore. You need somebody who can, exactly. You know, we need somebody who can bring everybody together. I was elected Republican floor leader in my second term in the House, and then was asked to be the lead Republican on the Appropriations Committee before my third term started. And I think I represent the views of the House Republican Caucus pretty well, and that's a predominantly Eastern Washington group of people. And so I don't think that primary has to come down to an argument over let's put everybody on the two-dimensional spectrum and figure out who's furthest to one side or the other. I think it's going to be more about who has the best ideas, who offers a fresh approach for today's new problems, and then who's going to be able to actually pull it all off, because it's we don't need to just win, we need to actually govern. And in the minority party, I passed more bills in my first term than any other freshman. So have been able to get support from folks on both sides of the aisle in the legislature, and you'll need that. You'll need to continue those partnerships and relationships when you're
Absolutely.
The governor.
There is no doubt that you would be a very, very formidable candidate if you were to run. Again, it kind of sounds like you are, but when you're officially ready to announce, I'm sure you'll be back on the show. As always, we appreciate the time that you spent with us. We've been talking with State Representative Drew Stokesbury. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely, Jason. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.